I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Smashbox TV's podcast 423. Terry Miller, the disc golf guy, remotely dialing in to Johnny V. As
I can't get enough of me, buddy.
I was home for 1 week. That was one time in studio with you, and I decided to hit the road yet again.
What does that say about me?
Everything everyone needs to know. If I have now been away from you something like 4 out of the last 5 weeks or 5 out of the last 6, I'm just saying you should take a hint.
Hey, listen, my family hasn't left me yet. I feel pretty good.
Well, that's...
I keep the doors locked.
You're doing all right. But yeah. So tonight, of course, USDGC and Throw Pink Women's Disc Golf Championships on our mind. Really, the second to last big event of the year. We'll also talk about the next big event of the year, which is going to be next week, of course, when we're talking about the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship. But this week, Throw Pink and USDGC on the mind. Of course, there's some other news and things that have come about. We'll talk about a few of the hot topics that are going on out there in the disc golf community. And like I said, we'll talk about this week's major and big events. But before we do that, it's almost like this. It's October. I think about my old high school days. I think about what it would be like to have been friends with this guy. So in our glorious homecoming of sorts, we're going to bring in Dynamite Dana Vici. Dana, buddy, pal, we miss you. How you doing?
I got to bring up the stinger.
I cannot believe you still have that intro. That you guys care. You didn't throw that in the trash can.
You could say that, or we're a little too lazy to get around to cleaning up files. So either way, either we love you and don't want to forget you, or just simply too lazy to do our jobs better. Either way, you're here. And Dana, it's been way too long. What's going on, buddy?
Not a whole lot. Just living life, work, kids, trying to squeeze some disc golf in, fighting injuries as I get older. You know, watching and enjoying the show that we've had all year long on the Disc Golf Network. Watching disc golf, trying to take it in, and yeah.
So just because there's a few people that are new here, disc golf continues to grow. You continue to sell discs and work with Disc Mania. You continue to design and develop courses. But for those who aren't intimately familiar with you, give everyone a super quick rundown in your background here and why you're a regular here on the show.
Yeah, Smashies, for those that have been tuning in over these last couple years, I started on from the beginning, Smashbox number one with Terry and Johnny, and was a weekly guest would come in and talk about the previous week's events and other random news, typically before the main guest. But yeah, these last few years have found me busy with family. I've got a couple of young kids and a real job now. I used to travel around and play disc golf and design courses and all that. I still do play disc golf, but just more casually, and still do design courses. But yeah, now I work for Discmania, and yeah, just been a blink. It's hard to, I don't even remember the last episode I've been on, and I know it was pretty sporadic before then, but it has been a while.
All right. Well, of course, welcome back. We're always glad to have you anytime. And like you said, you've been quite busy, especially with two young kids that like to go to bed right when we start. I don't know. I don't know if you're not training them right, but
don't listen to Terry when it comes to children and bedtime. Okay. Like we are all in different spots. My kids go to bed at like 7. To maybe.
Yeah.
My daughter goes to bed at 7. My son usually about 8:30. Terry's kids go to bed the next day. Usually the clock strikes 12 and they're like, maybe it's bedtime after I check in a few more social media TikTok sites.
I mean, just the older one. So, but with that, Dana, you know, I think back to many, many years ago, you were at the USDGC, you've played in a couple of them, and you know how big the USDGC is. And so it's awesome to have you here. And here we are now two nights ahead. They've pushed it back. Typically for the last few years, we've been starting on Wednesday. So Tuesday night has led right into a Wednesday start. This year, they're pushing it back. It's Thursday through Sunday. But talk to us about, you know, as someone who works for a manufacturer, someone who's played, someone who's a professional, and then yet you work intimately with, you know, professionals like Eagle and Simon and Ella and you know, everyone else on Team Discmania that you know. What does this week kind of mean for disc golf and for our players?
Yeah, it's, traditionally had been the culmination of the year. Historically, USDGC was the final event of the season, the final major event of the season. Of course, there'd be some random A tiers and usually down south, but yeah, it's the culmination of the season, and now we've got the Disc Golf Pro Tour Finals the following week, so it's really the grand finale of the year. It's been a long year. The season starts in February now, and there's huge events, Disc Golf Pro Tour, whether on the regular tour or Silver Series. We're back to having majors again. So long season, and this is kind of the, you know, it's in the player, you know, it's in the back of their minds all year, and it's been getting bigger and bigger, and then, you know, just had this epic East Coast swing and then right down into Rock Hill, and it's usually great weather, although there's been a few rainy years, but man, there's no place I'd rather be in early October than Rock Hill, South Carolina. I've got some really great memories of playing disc golf, hanging out, doing Monday qualifying, not qualifying, of course, but trying to qualify. But yeah, I don't know. I think I played in the event maybe 5 times in my career, and I've got some really special memories from playing there, because it's just, you know, rag on it all you want, call it what you will. It's one of the biggest events of the year, and it means a lot to the players. And it meant a lot to me when I was playing to qualify and to play and to cash and, you know, play with my heroes and watch them win and, you know, watch the action go down on hole 17 and, you know, thinking about some playoffs that I saw there as well. But yeah, just great vibes all around. And it takes me back to my early days. And when I was just getting into disc golf, I got the USDGC DVD from where Kenny and Barry have the playoff, and I just watched that. I wore that DVD out so many times, and then yeah, to have gotten to play there, and then now to watch, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and to think, you know, living in yesteryear and talking about what this event has meant to disc golf, we think about usually the largest payouts of the year were here. And of course, the Pro Tour Championship has come along and kind of dwarfed that in the last couple of years. But, you know, it was always this anticipation of, was it going to be six or eight or 10 or whatever, or $15,000? And we were talking about the largest payouts. I remember a very big conversation piece was, hey, the top 20 are getting $1,000. And that was truly groundbreaking and unheard of at the time. And now, again, as we've continued to grow and thrive, it's crazy to think like the payouts are so much grander now, just in general, where this doesn't even necessarily stand out from a payouts perspective, although it'll be hefty, I'm sure. But it's been interesting to see this evolution, and payout is a big reason.
Yeah. Yeah. And then another, you know, major thing that's evolved is the Throw Pink is bringing, mm-hmm. bringing the women in. Historically, it'd just been USCGC, one division, one champion. And we'd have a few female competitors over the years. Shout out Juliana, I believe the only female to ever cash. Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. But yeah, so we've got the Throw Pink. So we've got the best women here in the world competing at the arena or Winthrop Gold. So yeah, just super exciting. And, you know, now this year it's going to be live on the Disc Golf Network. There's no paywall. Get to watch disc golf all day for 4 days in a row if you want. I know I'll have it in on the background, or at least have a earbud in listening to the broadcast.
Yeah, it's been, you know, we've seen the media here also undergo, just like the course and just like the philosophy to the rules and everything else. USDGC has never been shy about taking on a new approach. And I think that's been very evident even from a media perspective, whether it's very early goings of pay-per-view, some of the earliest event to ever be broadcast live in general with Disc Golf Planet TV, different pay-per-view models, some post-production, some delayed post-production, just really everything. Everything that's ever been tried in disc golf at one point, I feel like, has been tried at this event as well. So what do you think about the model we've landed on, that everything is available, assuming you're a standard Disc Golf Network subscriber? Do you feel like that should appease enough people, Dana?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it provides value for the Pro Tour and the Disc Golf Network to not have it behind a paywall. And even though, like, I understood last year why it was behind a paywall, but, you know, there are some pretty loud voices out there, as there usually are, about it, you know, being a ripoff that you had to pay and all that. But I understood it, but I'm glad that whatever happened, and it's now part of the subscription. And, you know, I'm hopeful that, you know, the Disc Golf Network sees a nice bump in subs this week, and that, you know, that you guys and the rest of the team can put on a heck of a show like you have all year long.
It's really funny because normally I push for options. Like, I always want people to have as many options as you want. So if you want to pay for USDGC, do it. If not, don't. But they really took that away from you this year, so to speak, by making it part of the regular slate. And then also at the beginning of the season, there was like a $1 or $2 increase, which probably more or less covered what your payment would have been. So you were just, everybody was made to pay for the event, whether you wanted it or not. And I think a lot more people are happy with a pay increase and it including USDGC versus maybe a lower price point and having to pay for USDGC separate. It's all about perception, honestly.
Good point there, Johnny.
Yeah, no matter what, you're going to find people that are going to have their version or their complaint or their, you know, they're going to want their way with it. I mean, I even saw somebody today make a post that basically said, wait, I don't know what's going on, and almost had this frustrated feeling. And it's like, no, you're already a member. You know, they stated as much. You're already a member. Just go click on it. Like, it's that easy. Like, there should be no complaint, so to speak, whatsoever, if you're already a member and tuned in and ready to go. So, you know, of course, Dana, as a course designer yourself, and just in general, like I said, they're never shy about pushing the envelope or getting creative when it comes to course design. And to me, one of the biggest stories of this year, and it's subtle in a lot of ways, but removing the upper rope and only having the lower rope, and just having that change, like, what is your initial take on how they've done that this year?
Yeah, so I've been casually following along. So the upper rope no longer there, but they've got a mowing. They've ceased to mow along the out of bounds line and have a string along the bottom.
Yes, and I'll add on to that. Not only is it a string, they came in with, I figured it'd be a fancier tool, but no, they went the hard way with this. They said they came in with two like weed whackers at like 45 degree angles, opposing each other, and essentially like created a trench of sorts. And that's what the OB string. So it's basically laid, you know, flush or even below grade. And that's what's laid on the ground for the thousands upon thousands of feet. Like, I thought there's some fancy, I don't know, light trenching tool they used. No, it was two people, you know, edging through thousands and thousands of feet, and then secured the rope not only within the trench, but then also secured it to the ground additionally, where there's no upper rope whatsoever.
I could have just sent my kid there to do weed whacking, because I think that's how he does it. It's in my yard when we're done.
At angle from two different sides? Well,
more or less. I mean, whatever. Okay. So, well, no, I think that's really interesting, the way they're doing it. I haven't seen any pictures of it yet.
I could put some out there, but you know, Dana, the rope was kind of, rope wasn't invented at the USDGC, but rope identifying artificial OB, I mean, that's a patented Sunstein move of the USDGC for more than 20 years.
Yeah, again, love it or hate it, it was iconic. It's part of the arena, part of Winthrop Gold was the rope and the upper level. But I like the evolution. I like the sound of it, the more natural look. And then also, you know, part of, you know, as we've transitioned from out of bounds to hazards and places, and then, you know, that upper rope getting in the way. So it's going to be nice that, you know, one, discs aren't going to hit stakes. They're not going to hit the rope. Players are, if they're, you know, find themselves in the hazard, they're going to be able to, you know, not have to navigate throwing over a rope or whatever the case. But, you know, I've got to hand it to Innova and the USDGC crew. You know, they've done a lot of things. Some they've whiffed on some of it. Others they've hit the nail on the head. And this sounds like a nice change and something that, you know, we might see moving forward, because let's face it, the USDGC, it has an effect on the disc golf world. And we kind of saw that when I was in my touring days. I used to call it the USDGC effect. I'd go to an A tier and they'd have their, you know, their a solid course tricked out with insane OB and tight and crazy rules and all of this. And it wasn't always great.
Every A tier had a hay bale hole at one point. I think it was like everybody wanted to be hole 17 for a year or two. I remember even Mad City Open, we went there one year and I'm like, oh cool, they've got a hay bale island hole this year again. And they really do set the tone. When they try something new, it feels like it really does trickle down into the rest of disc golf, for better or worse sometimes.
Yeah, I haven't seen too many mozzarella sticks out there, but definitely hay bales and very tight, out of bounds. But again, some of it for better, some of it for worse. And this team here at Winthrop and Innova, they put their heart and soul into it, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, it. I got another quick story that I got out of JP yesterday. Jonathan Poole, event coordinator, who's been in charge for a couple decades. As they're going to play hole 3 to 4 this year, quote unquote safari hole, he said that more than 25 years ago, when him and his buddy came out here and would play their own safari layout before they even started talking about a USDGC existing, that was the hole that they played, was from 3's tee to 4's basket. And he says there's just something exciting and surreal about all of these years later. Of course, it's been two separate holes or variations of those holes now for two decades. And for them to play, he said that was the original hole ever designed before the USDGC was the USDGC. And it was just such a cool story. Him and a college buddy who came out and used to play the course, and would make up their own holes. And then that's when that kind of became the, the starting grounds for him then pitching to Harold, hey, let's take our existing course, let's trick it out, make it way more difficult, and then let's offer this, as an elite series event, that went on to be the USDGC. So pretty cool to hear that story. So, Dana, of course, there's a lot of conversation USDGC. Last year, or 2 years ago, we saw Throw Pink step up into a void because there was one less major for the women, being the United States Women's Disc Golf Championships didn't take place in 2020 due to COVID. So then at that point, Sarah Nicholson and Innova and the crew all said, hey, we're going to hold a Throw Pink event. And then that has become essentially a staple here at Winthrop as well, now called the Winthrop Arena. Does there need to be a different distinction? And what I mean by that is, people are naturally kind of treating it like it's also a major, even though technically it's not, but it very much still feels like one. We're on the same grounds. They get treated as well as any men, have throughout the years. And do we care about a distinction if it's a major or a large scale A tier? Is there a change that needs to happen?
I think there's a change that could happen. There's a lot at play there because obviously we've got the United States Women's Disc Golf Championship, which was in Madison, Wisconsin earlier this year and rotates throughout the country. But from my chair, it almost feels like we've probably outgrown that model for the women, and that they this is no knock on any U.S. Women's Disc Golf Championships, but they deserve a major in the same vein as the men do with the United States Disc Golf Championships. So I personally wouldn't mind seeing it be a major for the women, and possibly the United States Women's Disc Golf Championships as well. That just kind of on paper, anyways, just looking at it from the outside without considering any of the back end politics or back end things that not everybody is thinking about. I think it would be great for the women, and then maybe that Throw Pink, can be a rotating event, because the United States Women's Disc Golf Championship it's not just open, it's all the different divisions. So there's some things to work through on that. But again, on paper, just talking here with you guys, it makes sense to make it a major for the women and possibly call it the, United States Women's Disc Golf Championships. So they have that end of year major, and that, always like the men are always looking forward to Winthrop and everything, and that's not to take anything away from what they've built, what Sarah has built and Innova has built with the Throw Pink, because it is every bit of a major. It just doesn't have that M next to it. So, Yeah.
It'll be interesting. I say it'll be interesting next year when USWDGC is in late September, and then you've got 2 weeks before Throw Pink. I mean, I think that the way Throw Pink is perceived as we all say, it feels like a major. It does. I mean, they are getting treated just as well as every other male professional out there. So there is almost, other than the behind the scenes stuff, there's no distinction between the major at USDGC and the Throw Pink. But when you put the USWDGC 2 weeks in front of this, I'll say USWDGC has gotten some flack over the last few years. I feel like this year in Madison really picked it up. A lot of people were wishy-washy about the courses, but it proved to be very solid competition for many of the women. But I will say next year, USWDGC has to be better, or it's going to look... It's not going to look good coming 2 weeks before Throw Pink.
I have a hard time saying, you know, it needs to be better, because I feel like the hosts have, you know, lived up to what they had signed up for. Yeah. And that's, you know, we're talking
a lot of perception, though, unfortunately.
And we're talking pre-pandemic, and a lot has changed, and we're talking about, you know, events like being awarded the U.S. Women's Disc Golf Championship, and then, you know, we had the pandemic and pushed back. So it's going to be interesting to see, with obviously it on the schedule next year, if there is going to be a major change. And I'd also, you know, would be really interested to hear what you know, what the women think, and what the Throw Pink organizers think, and what they want. Again, this is just my personal opinions from here, but again, there's a lot of different things at play. And then, as mentioned, there's, you know, the politics behind it, more or less, because we're talking about a major that is owned by Innova, not by the PDGA, where the U.S. Women's Disc Golf Championships is that's a PDGA major. So there's a lot of things at play. Does Innova just get the major? Do they want the major? And, you know, do they want to continue with the Throw Pink? So,
yeah. And I think, and maybe to put this to bed, the one final thought I have is I think we just need to reevaluate what we want out of the U.S. Women's Championships, which has been this collection of women as one of the largest women's only events that takes place every year. And it's truly been this like family togetherness, everybody atmosphere. And we all know from being at and running large scale events, it's nearly impossible these days to appease everyone from an 8-year-old to an 88-year-old in both amateur and professional rankings, to not only appease them in terms of the scoring and the course challenges that present themselves, but then from an extracurricular standpoint, it's very difficult to make sure you're planning activities that apply to a 13-year-old as well as a 73-year-old, where everyone's engaged and having a good time. Like, that's a massive undertaking. And so I definitely do not want to underplay any of that challenge. And I think that's the same conversation we've had about our worlds, both pro and am and age protected and junior and everything else, is what's our end goal? Are we most focused on most people? Are we focused on the competition? Are we focused on family, camaraderie, and togetherness? Like, those are all the different things that have to be discussed, because then I think you really tunnel in, or you really hone in on the overall events deliverables, because it's otherwise impossible. I mean,
the USWDGC,
this weekend has 40 some women that are all our top professionals that qualified. That is not the same mentality as the USWDGC has. It's very different. So we just need to recognize and proceed with caution.
And the USWDGC has always been almost on a weekend of its own. It's not competing with anything. Like, there's no
correct
men to overshadow it. So, like it or not, this Throw Pink, still, it's they're treated just as well, everything. But let's be honest, the focus is USWD or USDGC. That is the bigger focus for a lot of people. Whether some people are FPO fans and they're probably watching Throw Pink and excited, but USDGC is a beast. It's a history. It's a, you know, and it's hard not to be overshadowed if you're throw pink. And so it just, there is something nice about USWDGC being by itself, being the focal point of an entire weekend where you don't have to think about, well, is there going to be a Paul Ricci battle? Nobody cares.
Yeah, sure.
So again, it's all what we want out of the events. We've talked about this a couple of times over the last few weeks. And what does Throw Pink want? And what does USWDGC want? We'll figure that out in the next year or two.
We'll shift kind of in. I mean, this is in a similar conversation, but this kind of feels like we could segue into the new schedule. That's kind of been the big news, is that we've seen the new schedule released for 2023 when it comes to our Elite Series events. You know, majors have been decided upon and such, but Elite Series events, namely the Disc Golf Pro Tour and the Silver Series, the Silver Series and the Euro Tour events.
It's just Silver now. They're just Silver events. It's not Silver Series. They've renamed them. They're just the Silver events.
Okay, I hope I didn't confuse anyone then.
I'm just saying, Terry, we want to be grammatically correct here.
Since when? So, Dana, the question is, I'm guessing you didn't sit down, you're not on tour, and you didn't pull out your calendars and start, you know, etching things in, but was there anything that did, you know, jump off the page at you? Any either shocks or surprises or you know, things that you just were in complete disbelief of? Anything?
One big one, and this is just personally, but been working closely with some partners and friends up in Canada, and one of them being Ben Smith, who's ran the Canadian Nationals the last handful of iterations of that event. He's now working to run the Discmania Open in Canada, and seeing that pop up on the as a silver event was a pleasant surprise. Although they are coming out of they were hit pretty hard by that hurricane. The first one, I'm forgetting the name of it, but anyways, their courses were hit pretty hard. So a July date was a little bit of a surprise, but as I understand, they're talking with the Pro Tour about how to approach that. But seeing one of the other things that really jumped out was the Elite Plus. We've got a couple of those. Hopefully I called it the right thing. I don't want to confuse you, Johnny. I believe Ledgestone and the Portland Open are going to be Elite Plus events. So have to imagine, you know, we know what the Ledgestone is, and the Portland Open has been a newer event that there's, you know, just a killer scene out in Portland. They've been at the Glen de Vere the last couple of years, an amazing venue. So I'm excited to see what that turns into. But those were a few of the first thoughts, was the addition of the Plus, and then seeing the Discmania Open on there.
Yeah, I feel like the Elite Plus series is, it's a way to emphasize specific events, and they're worth more points. They're worth more tour points. They're supposed to be probably bigger purses, better fan experience, more media, whatever that means. We don't know that yet. But I kind of feel like making the Portland an Elite Plus is a way to help force players' hands to go there. Because we saw a few players that just don't make the West Coast swing, or they may pick a different event. I feel like this might be a way to kind of make sure that all of our top pros are hitting the events that we want them to. I think that it might not be the primary reason, but it's definitely a secondary reason.
Maybe. I don't know. As I understand it, and you know, most players, like, that West Coast swing is coveted. In the early part of the year, the players love it. The fans are great out there. So yeah, the interest. Also, I'm not sure I agree with that, but maybe it was in the back of the minds of the Pro Tour organizers.
I mean, it's really pricey to go out to the West Coast. We all know it. We know players that, you know, will win events out there and still come out at a loss. You know, it's tough.
Yeah. 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 And that was, talking about the West Coast, I know there's been a ton of chatter, mainly from disc golfers out West, at the lack of events in that region. And it's, you know, you look at that overhead map and it's heavy Midwest and East Coast, where, you know, disc golf is huge out on the West Coast as well in those mountain states. And it's, don't really see too much on there. I know this year, we saw the match play stop over in Colorado, and I personally love seeing, the change of scenery and the change of style of golf, because as we all know, mountain golf is its own beast. So, it would be great to see a little bit more, in terms of the mountains, and maybe some more love on the West Coast. But, for me here in my chair, it was just fun to see and start speculating and thinking about, oh, could I go to this event, or could I, you know, do this? Of course, I'm not talking about playing. I don't even know if I'll be able to get into any of these events anymore, but I could go watch.
You could vend.
Now,
dude, put up a Disc Mania tent.
a couple of things to that. First of all, how do you feel about the general response when it sounds as if players kind of stated, hey, we don't like playing at elevation. You know, you mentioned, yeah, it's a different challenge, but some players basically have the mentality of, we don't want to go play in that place where you're essentially playing very different golf for one weekend or two weekends out of the year. Do you fall in the camp of, yeah, that's understandable, why have it be so drastically different one or two weeks out of the year? Or do you fall in the camp of, hey, suck it up, you're a professional, dealing with different winds, different weathers, different temperatures, different elevations, that's all part of being a professional disc golfer? Do you fall in one of those two camps, Dana?
Yeah, I do. I think it's a little ridiculous to put up a big stink about going and playing in the mountains. I want to see our players go throughout the season and play in different, you know, in different venues and different styles of golf. We've got wooded courses. We've got the hybrid golf course layouts. We've got the, you know, Maple Hill. We've got all these different styles of courses. And I want to see the best players go out and win in different environments, or see how they play. If I know that they're not a strong woods player, I want to go see them play in the woods. If they're not, you know, I want to see someone, you know, get out of their comfort zone and, you know, play in these different regions. And I think that's also important for the growth of the Pro Tour and growth of the sport. We need to touch as many of these regions as possible and build the fan base and build the professional side of things and show these towns and cities what the Pro Tour is all about. And so, yeah, I definitely fall on the side of, let's play different styles of disc golf, even if it's only one or two weekends in the middle of the year or whatever portion of the year. I want to see it. And then, you know, as if I was a player, if I was still a player, I would embrace it. Or, you know, if I dislike it so much, then I, like I've always done, I would not go. If there's, you know, an event that I don't like, the course or the region or whatever it is, I'm not going to go. And so don't sign up, or, you know, you're not going to be on the coverage. You're going to lose points. You're not going to, you know, be out there meeting new players, meeting new fans in different places. It's a great opportunity to grow not only your brand, promote the brand that you play for, but, you know, promote disc golf in general.
Unless you show up, play terrible, and then have a bad attitude about it. And then it might have been better you just didn't show up at all. and I'm just being devil's advocate here, you know, like you said, some players have actively said, yeah, I don't like that style of golf. I don't like those style of courses. You know, I'm likely either not going to perform well or monetarily, I'm not going to come out ahead. And they choose to forego it, take extra time off, or go find courses and events that suit them more. You know, obviously some people adapt and take on that, you know, mentality as well. So, yeah, I totally understand both sides of it. I don't think there's a right or a wrong per se, but it'll be interesting to see if we will have more golf in those areas like you're describing. And I guess this is also the segue to two things. One, first of all, can we all get back on board, even if you're not? Get on board. A tiers are 3 days. Disc golf pro tours are 3 days. Majors are 4 days.
Nope.
Worlds are 5 days.
Nope.
That's just not saying. That's not how we're doing it.
That's not how it's ever going to be done.
Somebody go ahead and go ahead and timestamp it, because that's how it should be done. Anyway,
take that idea, write it on a piece of toilet paper, walk to your bathroom, and flush it. It's gone. Never happen. Now that we have Elite Series Plus events that are all 4 days, you will never get a time when we get to a specific set like that. It's just, I agree with you.
I would
love it, but that idea is gone. Just blow your nose with it and throw it in the trash can, Terry. It's never going to happen.
I know. It should be. And then while we're at it, blowing our nose in the wind, I think that's the official phrase, right? While we're doing that, I'd like to just add right in there, for the love of God, people, there's 100 reasons why there's not a tournament in your area. They usually start with the two biggest. The two biggest being, well, it has to start with somebody has to put in a bid to host any form of large-scale event. That's the most obvious, like the single most obvious. They're not just literally throwing a dart at the calendar and saying, yep, that city's hosting a pro tour event or a major. All right. So somebody has to put in a bid. And part of that bid has to be a qualified organizing committee along with courses that suit it. If you're missing any of those three things, shut the F up. Like it's every year. So I know I'm just going to beat this drum every year, but you have to, there's 97 other things, but those are the three that immediately jump off the page. All right. You have to put in a bid. You have to have the courses, and you have to have an organizing committee that's qualified to even host an event. So that's, if you don't check any of those boxes, don't worry about the other 96 boxes if you check them or not. You have to check all three of those. And it's just, when our tour schedule is released, the barrage of people that then, you know, complain and say, we don't have an event. Why don't we have an event? There's your answer. All right.
And then you also have to consider, maybe those event directors, they like to do things their own way. There's the pro tour is great, but you also, you know, when you're running an event, you've built it up, then you're all right. I want to be on the pro tour. You've got to change maybe your historical date, you've got to change this. You have to do things differently and not play by the rules that you have built. And that's not a bad thing. That's, you know, but some events might want to say, hey, I'm going to do things my way. And, we're going to, you know, we love the pro tour and watching it, but that's a lot of work. And maybe we don't want to do it this time of year, X, Y, and Z.
What's the added cash requirement for an A tier? Is it 2,500 or 5,000 now? I know it's been a while. But just assume it's either one of those. To be a pro tour event, I think you have to have at least $15,000 added cash. I think. There's a huge jump.
That sounds roughly right. Yeah, 12,500 was the last I heard, and that was a year or two ago.
Sure,
so
and
that's probably right.
I'll tell you what, if you only raise 12,500, you're going to be probably the smallest DGPT event.
True.
Because there is a huge jump from when you're, even if you have an established A tier, an A tier that's been running for 7 years and it's been great, and it fills up and it runs so smoothly, that TD might not have the capacity to fundraise that amount of money. So there's so many things that even if you have those things, it's such a difficult thing to ask somebody as to do in our sport is to run a pro tour event or a major.
Yeah,
or whatever
then,
we're doing.
And then kind of along that note, I don't want to say it's quite my final word on it, but also just know there's still just 52 weekends in a year. And inevitably, something's going to conflict somewhere.
We're only covering like 30 of them, Terry. We have all winter.
There's going to be like 2,500 sanctioned events or 3,000 or 10,000 sanctioned events next year, whatever the number is. There's just going to be a conflict. Does it suck? Absolutely. I miss my favorite two events of the year every year for the last 5 years because I'm working a pro tour event and I would love to go play and be at another event, but there's just going to be conflicts. And I understand that some of them suck. Some suck more than another. I get it, but there's going to be a conflict and people just cannot seem to think past themselves when it comes to some of these conflicts. And there's like a point B to that, a subsection to that, which is if you can't play in a pro tour event and in a Masters age protected event on the same weekend because they conflict, again, make up your mind. What do you care about? Is it unfortunate they overlap? Of course it is for you. But we're talking about a handful of people. We are talking about just literally a handful of people that can perform well at a Masters event and perform well on an Elite Series event. Your Johnny McRae's and your Barry Schultz's and your own Scoggins and a handful of others. Is it suck they conflict? Sure. But we have to appease thousands of others, not six people that this afflicts. So I don't know. That's my ranting for now. But it's I just wish people would think outside of themselves for a moment. There's so much more to it than just you and your schedule, including the TDs, like you just mentioned. There's so much more.
We'll kind of just coast off of that thought. Alan Risley brings up it's 3,000 for an A tier and now 25 for an Elite Series. It's twice,
25 20, grand added.
You have to
host an Elite Series event.
Yeah. So speaking
That's
of
amazing.
All of that money, it was also announced today of the Pro Tour finale this year.
What?
The Pro Tour Championships is $302,000 purse. They like to just get it up just barely above 300. So $302,000. And last year we had some really cool sponsors in Guarantee Rate Mortgage, I believe, Johnsonville Brats, and somebody else. But this year, Barbasol Shaving Cream. Dana, you look like you need to shave. Terry, I shaved today. Shaving a haircut.
You shaved last year. You did, Johnny.
No, I shaved this morning because if I'm going to get a haircut, I always shave in general. But the funny thing is, as everyone says, our disc golfers don't really use Barbasol to shave. They use them to dye discs.
Mm-hmm.
Buying nonetheless, right?
That's right. Exactly. Just, you know, we're finding a use for something that isn't necessarily. Because let's be honest, our hairy hippies that play on the course aren't going to shave, but they are going to dye discs. So what do you think about that number, Dana? 302,000. And MPO and FPO, I believe the top four or five spots all get paid the same. It's like 35,000 and then 12,000. I'd have to look at the numbers for sure. But they're equal right down the line.
Yeah.
See, you know, I feel like instead of like pumping it all in this year, they should be like going back and, you know, paying the players that, you know, made the finals and, you know, didn't get a lot of money.
Like the ones in like 2018 and 2019, maybe 2017.
Hey, I'm good with that as long as we're going back to 2010 and retro paying media personalities. If as long as we do that too, dating back to 2010.
Yeah. Huge number. And, you know, I've been torn about the timing of the Pro Tour finals because call me old school, but again, you know, Winthrop, USDGC, like the practice rounds and then four rounds on the course after a long season. It, to me, again, it's always, it's always felt like the end of the season. And then to come back around that next week with the, you know, the biggest payout ever and this huge event, I feel like, gosh, I almost wish it was, I understand why it is when it is, but, great on them for getting the added cash and the outside sponsors last year, this year. It's just, you know, we're going to continue to see these new big names come in and sponsor disc golf. But, you know, if players weren't hyped up about the Pro Tour Finals, they damn well better be now after seeing those payouts, because that's some disc golf rich money right there.
It certainly is. It's funny how quickly – feeding off of what you said, how quickly we all felt that way about USDGC just 2 years ago. Like 2 to 3 years ago, everyone was saying, man, the Pro Tour after USDGC, it just feels like we should be wrapped up. I don't get that from... I haven't heard that in 2 years. Honestly, I haven't heard anyone say that on social media, on anything. Everybody gets pumped for the Pro Tour finale because of the money they've pumped into it. They did exactly what they needed to do in order to make this... to quickly establish this event as a premier event, because had they not added a bunch of this extra money, it would have continued to feel like an afterthought. But by throwing and sponsoring and getting all this money into the event, they immediately pushed it up to a premier event that players look forward to. And now that is the end of our season. And, you know, with the exception of like the wraparound Silver Series that no one who really tours regularly is probably going to play. You might get a few locals, but you know, you're not going to probably get your big guys to go and play. But the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championships is the end of the season now, and it's amazing how quickly we can adjust.
Well, Terry, I know you got a point, but Johnny, talking about these Silver Series, because it is Silver Series this year, events at the end of the year, those points go for next year. So, I mean, some of these players that are on the outside looking in, they might be booking flights or planning trips to, where is it, Virginia and Florida? Is that where the –
Yep.
Get a jump start on those points? Because, I mean, man, as I proved a few times, you just got to get in. You got to get in and then get hot at the right time for the Pro Tour Finals, and it can be, you know, it can be a life changer. Wasn't for me, but maybe for someone else.
You know how I know Dana's old? Because he's like, yeah, I'm proof of that. Whereas of last year, we had Nathan Queen, who came from the first round, barely got in, and won $30,000. But no, Dana, your run back in the late 2010s proves it.
It was even before that.
We'll never forget, Dana. We'll never forget.
I'm here for you, brother. You almost took down that Macbeth character.
Yeah, cheater. Let's put it this way, and maybe the final thought on it is that the Pro Tour, like you guys just said, with the added cash and going even after the USDGC, I think wants to ultimately overshadow. I mean, let's be real. They have an absurd amount of money. They have had for the last few years. This year's no different. And I don't think it's at all out of line or even a question that the Pro Tour wants to be like a major and or supersede a major. You're talking about the stiffest competition on tough courses with a ton of media and an absurd amount of cash. Like, what about that doesn't scream major other than the unique format? And so I think if Jeff Spring were on the call with us right now, he would say, yeah, why, you guys should be having a conversation about how the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship is as big as any of our other big events. It just doesn't quite have that M or that distinction PDGA-wise, but obviously it checks a lot of the other boxes. And if you keep having a splash like that in terms of the added cash and the equality with the women and the payout, even though there's half as many, you're talking about, you know, life-changing is maybe a little bit drastic, but you're talking about a massive momentum shift in our disc golf tournaments and what it means to be closing out the season. So you just think about it right now. 5 years from now, we may be saying, yep, man, the USDGC just is no longer, you know, what it used to be, because the Pro Tour Championship is so massively anticipated and successful and wealthy. It may be dwarfing the USDGC. We may see the roles reverse. The analogy I have is, when the Pro Tour started, everyone said, yeah, the Pro Tour is great. We think it's going to be all right. Yeah, we'll see. But the National Tour is where it's at.
Just a bunch
fast
of B tiers.
Fast forward 3, 4, 5 years. And of course, eventually the Pro Tour consumed the National Tour, and the Pro Tour was the preferred tour overall, if we're speaking in generalities. So I'm just saying, if that's the long-term plan and goal, they seem to be on the right path.
Yeah.
So, okay. Anyway, Dana, I'm kind of going through a list. I actually made a list of a couple items to talk about tonight. We've covered most of those. And how about we'll end you with this, and then we can let you cut loose. The five spots and the two spots. We'll call it the five spots for USDGC. It ultimately became two spots of earning their way into the Throw Pink. Did you consume any of that? I know we had a show and everything else, or did you maybe just take a look at the names? A fellow Illinois golfer got in. What can you tell us about Ian, if anything?
Cat Daddy? Ian Cat Daddy? Yeah. Good kid. Super excited for him. I definitely, the Monday qualifying and Monday qualifiers, like I said, I've tried Monday qualifying and didn't make it in. And back in those days, you could restart. I think I played two full rounds and two half rounds on Winthrop in a day, and had some good rounds and choked him away. But yeah, I was definitely following the scoring to see who was going to get in. There's, there were some really good players trying to get in. You know, Johnny McRae was a person I was keeping my eye on, and he's gotten in on Monday before, and I their day about Monday qualifying and who's had the best finishes. And I believe Johnny McRae in 2020, he got 10th place coming in off Monday qualifying. And then I believe Anthon maybe was another one. Josh Anthon in 2012 got third place. I was keeping an eye on Johnny, wondering what he was going to do, if he's going to get in. You know, he's had just such a wild year with the heart attack, and then also winning the major and everything. It would have been interesting to see him get in there. And of course, he's got history at Winthrop. I think the Pro Tour just posted his hole 17 from way back when he couldn't find the island. But anyways, yeah, I was definitely watching it close, and saw that Ian qualified, and there was a four-way playoff for the last two spots. And exciting stuff. And I think, was it plus one was the final tie spot? So, I mean, I'm always interested to see what the Monday qualifying is going to shoot, because it gives us a little bit of an indication of what we're looking into the week. Obviously, there wasn't any of the top of the line elite players out there playing, but high stress level round. Ian got in. I saw you had an interview with a guy that's got a call off work. I'm trying to think of his name.
Alex Zyrus.
Yeah. Yep. Who are our other qualifiers?
at least his employer is a disc golfer. So if there's anyone that understands the significance and the severity and the depth of the request, it sounds like it should be his boss.
Yeah. Who are the rest of the qualifiers? Do you know off the top?
We had Joseph Anderson. Ian shot 2 under. Joseph Anderson shot 1 under. Aaron Doyle shot even. Oh, yeah. And then the rest were at plus one. And it ultimately ended up being Alex and Max Regetneg, I think is what it is.
Max.
Yeah, Regetneg. Mm-hmm.
And then we had a couple world champions on the women's side. Sarah Cunningham and Paige Hsu play their way in. But yeah, the Monday, it's turned into it's always been that high stress, but now so much more with the opportunity to only play one round. So every shot counts. So it's going to be interesting to see how those players fare. Typically it's, looking at this list, there's a lot of missed cash. If you were a Monday qualifier, because I mean, you put it all out there on Monday and, get in. And a lot of times you've got to play and hang out all day in case there's ties. And it's just a long, stressful day and just round of disc golf. So best of luck to all those Monday players that got in. And we'll see if any of them can claw their way into the cash. And that's a question I've got for you guys. Maybe you can answer it. Historically, back in my playing days, they never posted the payouts until like after the final round started. So you never knew where the money line was going to be. And gosh, I think that was the year Climo lost his cash streak, was at a USDGC, and I was right behind him. We were both a little perturbed at the fact that we were outside of the cash, averaged well above 1,000 and got in, and look at the payouts, and they had chopped it way, way, way low. So, but then there's years where they play super deep. So it was always kind of a crapshoot. Do you know if the payouts are going to be posted or are posted ahead of time, especially talking about Pro Tour?
So per PDGA rules, and I'm a little dated on this. I don't run as many tournaments as I used to. And according to the board, I was apparently wrong one other time. But no, per PDGA rules, I think it's a rule that that payouts for a tournament have to be posted prior to the start of a final round. And that could be 1 minute before the start, whatever, but they have to be posted prior to the start of a final round. So if you're playing in a two-round event, you're supposed to have payouts posted before that second round starts. Obviously, four rounds, blah, 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 blah. I just went out to the PDGA page where there sometimes is a projected payout button, and they have not filled that out or gotten to that point on the at least on the PDGA's page. Now, is that somewhere else within the USDGC page? Possibly. But I'm just guessing, we're not going to see that for a few more days. And part of the reason, I feel like, in years past has been, is they kind of arrive at a final payout and a final added cash line based on sometimes how well sales go inside the pro shop on site. If you do $100,000 in sales versus $7,000, using some extremes, that may affect how much you're going to add into the purse. Maybe you're hoping to add 30, but you have a really great sales week, so you can actually add 40K. Again, I'm just making up some numbers here, but I think it won't be till much later in the week that we'll see payouts. And quite honestly, this goes back to what I was saying before. There's a lot of events that probably are a little gun shy that don't live up to massive payouts by some of our most elite events. And so what you used to maybe beat your chest about and be super excited to brag about, now you might be like just on par or maybe even a little below some of our crazy new standards as the bar continues to raise. And you shouldn't be ashamed of it, but it's no longer the headline of, hey, we're giving away $15,000. Well, they're giving away $35,000 the next weekend. And so, again, just postulating here, but payout definitely. Let me put it this way. I'd bet a stack of Frisbees that the payout for this weekend will not supersede the payout for next weekend, and therefore isn't as much of a conversation piece. The title's more important than the payout here this weekend.
Agreed. And then also, yeah,
I'd be shocked if first place wasn't at least $15,000 this weekend. I think based on a lot of what the other events are doing, Worlds was a 20 grand payout. Next week's going to be a 35 grand payout. USDGC has always liked to be unique is one way to put it, but they like to be up in the numbers. So it,
for sure,
I don't know, and I don't blame them. They're a major; they should be. I think that 15 grand feels like the rightish number. 15 to 20 wouldn't shock me for first place, and.
Well, let's put it this way, and I actually had to look this up because I didn't know. 2019 was Conrad. He won 12K. Mm-hmm. 2021, I skipped 2020 because I didn't get there yet. Macbeth did win 20K last year, which was by far.
Oh, did he? Okay.
So yeah, which was by far the largest payout.
The largest. Then I think it's going to be 20 again.
At USDGC.
I think it'll be
20 I'm guessing again. 20 or 25 if I had to guess.
Yeah, I'm going to guess 20 as well. I think they're going to stick about the same thing.
And I wonder, you know, piggybacking on what Terry had said, now with spectator passes, funding payouts or partial payouts going into that, like, you know, there's going to be a ton of people that want to come and watch and haven't bought tickets yet. So watching the weather or otherwise, or they're disc golfers and don't plan well, whatever the case may be. So, but whatever it is, I'm going to be here in Illinois watching on the Disc Golf Network, or I'm going to have an earbud in my ear listening and hanging out with the family and doing things. But I got to say, it feels good to get back on with you guys. I appreciate that that I got the invite. It feels good. And it feels good to talk to you and see some really familiar names out there in the chat. So,
yeah, well, right,
before you go, Dana, before you go, give us your quick prediction. Who's taking MPO? Who's taking, who's taking USDGC? Who's taking Throw Pink?
Yeah, I'm going to start with the Throw Pink, and not going to really step outside too far outside the box here, but Tatar has just been so dang good, and her forehand has been damn near perfect, it seems, this season. But if I was to pick someone outside of Tatar, I'm going with Owen. I like how the course sets up for her, and she's hitting 30-something% or more of those circle two putts, and I don't know. I love cheering for Owen. So I'm looking at Owen and Tatar on the FPO side, and man, the men's side. I keep thinking about hole 17 and the pressure and four rounds of throwing in bounds on 17, and you know, can a Gannon Burr get through hole 17? He's had a great year, but hasn't. Has he popped off a big one this year? So I was kind of leaning towards a new player, but you know, we got Ricky Wysocki. He's never won at Winthrop. In fact, he's missed cash quite a bit at Winthrop, if memory serves, or maybe just once. I'm not sure. I feel like Ricky has never really excelled at Winthrop. Does he have momentum on his side, and can he get that monkey off his back? But I'm gonna go with it's either Paul Macbeth or a new player. We'll have a new champion, or Paul Macbeth.
Mm. So, I mean, he's on Team Discmania. He's been playing really well this year, but he hasn't done well at majors. No Simon? Is this a course that's set up for Simon without him throwing forehands?
Yeah, Simon. I mean, he's an absolute wizard with the frisbee with the disc. Like, he's got all the skills, and I hope the Simon that shows up is the A game. You know, we see what we saw at Maple Hill last week. I mean, he's got four Elite Series wins this year. That would be killer. And I don't know. I thought maybe for a second you were going to say something about Kyle Klein, who last year, you know, went to a playoff. We haven't seen him in the winner's circle this year. So but has had a really strong year. So maybe he's going to catch his stride out at Winthrop and find some of that magic from last year and cash in. But yeah, Simon and or Kyle are a couple names that I think about. And then I mentioned Gannon earlier.
Okay.
You know, it feels like it's a matter of time before Gannon pops the big one off. But again, I think about hole 17 and the pressure and the shot and, you know, who's done it. And it's Paul.
You know, we wouldn't be doing our hard hitting journalistic duty with full blown, you know, scrutiny and integrity if I didn't ask you about a Team Discmania player that some are saying made a very salty post in Colton Montgomery. And I guess maybe my main question to you is, and I'll just read what he posted on his Instagram. He said, "First time in my professional career, I've missed out on playing the USDGC, but as much as I'm disappointed, I'm not too bummed. This event used to feel prestigious to me, but it just feels like a gimmick nowadays. Best of luck to everyone competing this week." Does he make that same post if he qualifies? Well, clearly he'd have to change some of the words because he would be in, but like is that tough to read thinking like you miss the cut, but then you kind of, you know, talk trash about it, but it was an event you were just like literally hours ago trying to get into.
Yeah, I'd say if I was you know, his social media manager in his ear, I would have said, "Hey, let's think about this post before we throw it out there," because, you know, I think he did make a follow up about that afterwards, mm-hmm. and probably after catching some heat. But yeah, it wasn't the best. You know, it wasn't the best thing to say, in my opinion. But if that's how he, you know, if maybe that's how he feels. But, you know, ultimately, if you're a pro player, if you're on the tour, USDGC, you want to be there. You want to play in it, whether you think it's gimmicky, whether it's got, you know, some crazy, crazy things, mozzarella sticks or whatever it is. You want to be there. You want to be in it. That's what you work hard for. You want to, you know, play great every weekend, but the majors, worlds, United States Disc Golf Championship, you know, that's, I feel for Colton, and, you know, maybe maybe he means it. Maybe he regrets it. I'm not entirely sure, but if I was whispering in his ear, I would have said, you know, put this in your draft.
Simmer down now.
Come back in an hour.
Yeah, here's what I will say. I totally agree with him in the sense that, you know, his follow-up post essentially said, "Hey, you know, I might be a professional, but I'm still entitled to my own opinions." And that is just clearly part of the crazy world we live in, that, you know, whether you call it cancel culture or whatever, just the idea of like he can have an opinion. I think we can respect his opinion, agree or disagree with it. I think, you know, like some maybe had accused Ricky of, I think there was a timing to that opinion that didn't sit well. You know, you literally just didn't qualify, and then you're saying this. So I can understand how the timing played into that, maybe more so. You know, he posts that a month ago or in a month, and it's a different story. But the fact that he literally tried to qualify that morning, didn't get in, I think that's probably where it struck a chord. But, you know, I do like the idea, though, that our players shouldn't always be explicitly beholden to towing the company line. And it's just a matter of, like, where's the right and wrong with all of that. So, anyway.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're hard-hitting journalists, Dana, and you work for Discmania, and he throws Discmania. So we did our job here, damn it.
Yeah, and you know, I definitely was thinking about Ricky when I read that, and I think you guys had him on after he posted, or after that whole thing. I still need to go back and listen to that because I don't get it, Rick. But maybe he made some good points when he was on with you guys. But anyways, here we are. dragging on, trying to get me in trouble.
No. I want to say thank you for joining us. We're gonna we'll talk about Nico, his suspension reduction. We'll talk about that. We've got a few other topics here that I actually wrote down that we can go over, but we'll cut you loose for now. And thanks for joining, as always. And we'll have to see where we can have you. You're always welcome here, Dana. But the history, I think, of some of my first USDGCs or my early ones, you and I enjoying some of the festivities out here for some of the parties, and just the iconic place that it is, and the how special it is to be here. You and I picking up some Paul Macbeth Rock 3s that Paul didn't really want, but then sold for a bunch of money, and you sold yours for a big profit, and I'm holding on to mine still for much bigger profit. There's a lot of memories here.
For sure, Terry, and yeah, I cherish those, and I do cherish my my Tuesday nights over the years on Smashbox. So, good luck on there. Good luck out there at Winthrop. You'll be on the ground for men and women, or what's your story?
I'll be having. I'm going to challenge myself to come up with the most absurd little snippets and interviews ever when people come off the course. I am tasked with the idea of, as players come off the course, to, at my own volition, grab various MPO players and then have a chat with them. That's going to be all part of the bonus content. And I'm just going to put out a disclaimer right now. It might not be golf related. If there's somebody I haven't seen in a while and it's time for us to have a little catch-up session, and they're on the 33rd card anyway, well, it's time for us to talk about, we're going to get weird. So,
I want you to have a really great interview with somebody off like the 15th card, and then just ask them the most random, like, so what's your favorite Nightmare on Elm Street movie? And just a complete, just the most off topic, weirdest question you can actually ask somebody. Just have a list of them. Like 15 of those questions and just rattle them off to different players.
Oh, how much can I make them squirm?
That's a great question.
Okay, we're coming up with good ideas here. So anyway, Dana, I'm interviewing MPO players. That's going to be bonus content for everybody that's subscribed to the Disc Golf Network. And then every night, myself and Christine Jennings are going to be heading up the FPO commentary for post-production. So anyone that watches that will get Christine and I. So that's the majority of my assignment. And then every night, founders willing, I'm going to be right here in this seat, and I might be giving you my own personal takes after all of that, when I'm officially off everyone else's clock and I punch into the Disc Golf Guy Network. Then we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, whatever.
Maybe you'll join for one of those. I promise it'll be fun.
Oh, tasty. All right. Well, whatever you're doing,
right,
go get them. Johnny V, we know where you'll be. I believe in you and – you and the rest of the crew back there, best of luck and smash these. We'll see you, I don't know, maybe again soon, maybe in a year. Take care.
Good night, Dana.
All right, we love you, buddy. Have a good night, Dynamite. All right.
I'll say this. If Dana's prediction comes true and Own somehow wins, there is going to be tears coming from so many people watching Own win, it's going to feel almost like the Paige Bjerkus worlds. Like, just that would be the greatest story ever told.
I'll reiterate, there is zero reason why she couldn't win.
I agree. Just zero. She keeps it in bounds. Usually she's very steady, keeps it straight ahead. She doesn't have a ton of distance.
She makes every freaking putt.
And she makes every freaking putt inside of 50 feet practically. But
yeah,
she just can't seem to hit that number one spot. She's been 2, 3, and 4, feels like. So
going for that number one spot. So real quick with that, that's a great segue, Johnny, that you didn't plan, nor did I. But I'm going to go over to UDisc. I'm going to check out the win probabilities. And I pulled up FPO because you were just talking about them.
Can I guess?
Kristen Tatar.
Tatar. Well, I think Kristen Tatar is at 54%.
Ooh, that's low.
Damn.
They have this is UDisc, and these are just probabilities. So they're magical numbers that were calculated, and you got to go throw frisbees. That's why that's all that matters. But they have Kristen Tatar. This is UDisc win probability listed at 64%.
Wow.
Paige Pierce, 6%. Own, 5%. Katrina Allen, 5%. Henna, 4%. Missy Gannon, returning champion, 4%. And so what's crazy to me about that is, excuse me, not only do you have Kristen way up at 64%, there's not a clear-cut second. No. The next seven women are all within 4 or 5 percentage points. So I'm not a stat guy, but they're basically saying it's Kristen, or maybe there's a slight chance for anyone else, but we pretty much think it's Kristen. It's, to me, that's incredible. Now, I'm going to say there's going to be a very different scenario, I'm guessing, on the MPO side, a couple clicks over. Ooh. Thanks to our friends at UDisc. This is not a paid advertisement for UDisc, but I will be using you all week.
Win probability. Macbeth has to be the favorite.
Macbeth.
I'm guessing
at
24%.
Close, 17%. Waisaki, 14%. Got to get that monkey off his back. Matt Oram, 11%. Gannon Burr, 10%. Dickerson, 7%. Heimberg, 7%. Kyle Klein, your runner-up last year, 3%. Simon Lizotte with just a 3% win probability for this particular event. So, but here again, it's 17, 14, 11, 10, 7. Like, there's not the disparity between first and everyone else like there is on the FPO side, where Kristen's the heavy favorite.
I think part of that, and I'm sorry I'm going to say this, but she has such a high win percentage because there's so much of the field that can't win. Like if you look at the field, then again, I say can't, I'm talking less than 1% chance that your middle of the tier FPO field just doesn't win. Whereas if the MPO field, you have your Isaac Robinson that will win. You have your Gannon Burr, your Drew Gibson. Those guys will pop off and win because they have the potential to. Half of the FPO field feels like they're all playing for fourth at best. And they all shift up and down. So I think that's why Tatar has such a high percentage to win, obviously, and her history this year, where she has not finished off of the podium.
You know, which is crazy because I saw a stat that showed that the last time that had happened was back in 2015 by Katrina. And then you think, wow, it's been 7 years since that's happened. And
but Katrina did it back to back years. 2014.
Yeah, and I think it's easy.
It's 2 full years.
Yeah. And I think it's easy, though. It's easy almost to dismiss it, but from back then a little bit more so than it is today, where you see so much more, just the division is so much more diverse and it's just so much deeper. And that's not to take away from her dominance and her skillful play all those years, but it's less surprising to see that from back in those years than it is like it is today. Like, to think Katrina didn't finish outside of third this year is honestly I've said it probably 10 times.
Tatar.
I'm sorry. Kristen Tatar hasn't finished outside of third this year. Her closest to that was tying for third at an event. This is off memory, but it almost sounds disgusting just to say it and to think of like that level of consistency throughout an entire year. And it's not like she played 7 events. I mean, she was in the thick of it at every event. It's just, it's mind blowing.
And you would think, the funny part is, you would think, wow, that's quite an accomplishment. Like, that's amazing, which it is. But then you go back to the FPO field and it's happened 8 times or whatever that number is. Like, it's not unique for the FPO field. It's amazing accomplishment, but we've seen it before.
Yeah, but that's a numbers thing. A little bit more of a numbers thing.
Partially. I mean, because when Katrina did it in 2014-15, there was what, probably 7? There's 6 elite tier events, because that was before the Pro Tour.
Yeah.
And then your majors, which you probably had maybe 3 majors, we'll say. So arguably, and granted, she had, the, I remember those years, that those were phenomenal, but yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know. But I agree with Tatar. It's the sheer number that she has done. I mean, we had, there's got to be what? She has to be in 13 or 14 events where she hasn't finished out of it. Because I know she missed some of the pro tour being overseas, a few events, but still amazing. Yeah. An amazing year for Tatar.
Yeah. So let's quickly jump over to, I know I'm waiting on Sarah Nicholson of Throw Pink. I saw her as I was leaving the Innova warehouse today, and she's like, hey, I got this. And I'm like, yeah, send me that note. Mm-hmm. I've forgotten what that note was. There's some reminder. I know there's going to be something really cool during the opening ceremony tomorrow that I can't spoil, but she had other stuff to remind me of. And so I'm waiting on our favorite smashy, Sarah Nicholson. And I'll follow that up by saying, and we already touched on it though, there were two qualifiers at the last moment. Vanessa Van Dyken, unfortunately, had to withdraw from the Throw Pink event, and she made a long post about that, saying her significant other has had COVID, and she's been sharing space with him, and therefore she felt it was best to withdraw. That allowed for a second competitor to become to earn their way in on Monday qualifying. And as you just mentioned, that was Sarah Cunningham, your 2010 world champion, and then Paige Bjerkus, your 2018 world champion. So kind of cool to see two world champions qualify in those positions.
Paige Bjerkus, who is now Paige Shu, but yes.
Did I just call her Bjerkus?
You did.
Or did you before? You did before. So it threw me off.
I think maybe I called her Bjerkus when I was talking about her world championship, which she was Bjerkus then, but she is Paige Shu now.
That's just the founders talking. So
it's not the backwoods yet talking.
Nope. Okay. So real quick, let's, there's two very big conversation pieces left in my opinion. Yes. One being for sure, Nico LaCastro, it's been kind of finalized and official that his appeal and his suspension had been reduced. I feel like this was last week, but maybe not. Had been officially announced and reduced from a 9-month suspension back down, or not back down, but down to a 6-month suspension. And that you, many of you would say, who cares? It's 3 months. What's the difference? The difference is how 2023 starts. And the fact that he won't miss, I think if he would have had that extra 3 months, I think I read somewhere it would have been, he would have missed like 6 or 9, maybe 6 of the Elite Series events for 2023. So there's like 6 obviously events that he would have been able to get points for and everything else. So it the suspension in a sense, I don't want to say felt more punishing. It was exactly what it was. It was 9 months, but it was it, when you looked at the exact timing of it, it definitely carried even more weight than just being suspended for the end of this year because of the way it carried into next year. I don't know if the lesson is, hey, do dumb shit earlier so that it doesn't affect your next year. I don't know what the lesson is there.
But yeah, I mean, if you're going to do something dumb, make sure it's before.
Just plan it.
Like, make sure it's
exactly
before
like
July.
March.
Yeah, like yeah. April, May, June, somewhere around there. And then
no.
I think the no, number.
But the serious takeaway is that it's been reduced by 3 months, which has a massive impact on his play, on his earning potential, on the 2023 season, the 2023 accolades. Like, it has a massive implication to the 2023 season by him having 3 less months on his suspension. So that's, to me, why it is definitely newsworthy.
I think the number that they eventually arrived at, 6 months, is feels, because everything is all feels here, because there is no right or wrong. It feels like an appropriate number based on the severity of what he did. He intimidated an official. There was no contact. There was no, like, there was what I get it. So, and in today's day and age, when we have such high purses that these players are relying on, and Nico being a unique situation where he doesn't really have a disc sponsor right now, partially due to what he did. So he's not making any money outside of disc golf. So he's very reliant on his tournament winnings. Should that matter? Maybe, maybe not. But I do feel like 6 months feels the right. The issue that I and others have is, and we won't get any answers from the PDGA because they don't really comment on disciplinary action. And I don't blame them. But why was it reduced? Why was it what it was in the first place versus what, you know, the standard default, I think of, you know, I think they said it originally was supposed to be like 24 months or 12 months or something, which is what the PDGA, or I forget exactly what the numbers are, but there is just a little, it's a little arbitrary, I'll say. And I think it's the right number. I have no problem with 6 months. I feel like, as I said, based on what he did and what he missed out on, it feels like an appropriate punishment. It doesn't feel extreme. It doesn't feel like they let him off lightly.
There's no right or wrong.
It's literally a gut
feeling. I mean, there's just plenty of people that are screaming right now, you know, F
that
you.
He got off light and
he got off too light. And then just as many people screaming F you, he shouldn't have been suspended for more than 10 seconds and everything in between. And again, that's it's quite subjective. I will read, cause I think back to reading, Colton, so I'll see if I can quickly paraphrase. This is a very lengthy message, but Nico, just today, this is maybe why it's more significant. So I'd like to take a few moments to thank everyone who supports me. I am exploring my options as a free agent into 2023. I'm working very hard behind the scenes to set new goals for myself on and off the course. Thank you to everyone at Clash Disc who's been supportive. They're really nice people that I call friends after the European Open and the Clash crew supported me when I went into therapy retreat in Sweden for a couple of weeks. At that time, Clash offered to help cover rescheduling costs of my flight on the way back and stayed in touch in a very positive way. That meant a lot to me. Big thank you to Gateway, everyone else, St. Louis native. This is a very long paragraph. My uncle, Dave McCormick, who designed over 100 courses. Thank you to everyone who has sent me encouragement, inspiring messages, and want to continue on my journey and strive for greatness. With all respect to my previous partnerships, I'm taking the time to weigh out my options and consider what's best for me as a professional. I could be throwing a mixed bag or be exclusive. I love the sport, the people who play, and everything it encompasses. It's clear to me I was born to do this. I really couldn't imagine any other lifestyle. Looking forward to my official return in 2023. So. Best of luck to him, of course. And we'll see. We'll see what that means. But as of now, it's been officially determined that, he's been reduced from 9 months to 6 months. And many of you already know, with the nature of the big money skins match taking place in 2 weeks or 2.5 weeks from now, mm-hmm. down at the Eagles Crossing course, that's not sanctioned. So Nico, along with lots of other high-profile players are signed up to be part of that. So best of luck to them. What is it? 50 grand a first, I think is what they're giving away.
Is it? Is it that much? It's amazing.
I think it is. I think it's 50 grand.
How come I wasn't invited to try to win that?
I don't know. I mean, your chances. Hey, let's check the U-Disc win probability.
It's match play. My chances are.
Uh-huh. You can get hot for 18 holes.
It's as good as anybody as long as I get on the card where everyone's pushing.
They're not.
As long as I get on a card where everyone's pushing and I throw one in from 300 feet, I've got a chance, Terry.
No, you still don't. Because somebody else will be parked when you're throwing in from 300.
That's beside the point.
Good birdie. And they'll be like, I'm still underneath the basket for birdie, though.
I'd be like, but I made it push, jerk. Now you're going to lose the next one.
All right.
I'm just here to play spoiler.
As we get into another very quick but serious subject, also today, the PDGA sent out
an email. That
said,
Terry likes to call these teasers.
Yeah. This basically said that there's another email/survey that should be arriving tomorrow. And funny. Here it is. It says on Wednesday, October 5th, which would be tomorrow, they'll receive a link to a survey as part of a research study that is being approved, that has been approved by an institutional review board. With the results from the survey, the researchers hope to learn more about transgender people's participation in sport. Blah blah blah. Here's the link. The summary results of the survey may be used to inform PDGA policies or publish in an academic journal. The researchers are not collecting the name or PDGA member number. Your, and this is in bold, Your survey responses will be kept strictly confidential, and your name, PDGA number, member number, email, or IP will never be associated with your individual survey responses. You must be at least 18, and it should take you no more than 6 to 8 minutes to complete it on any device. The link can only be used once and cannot be shared. Participation is voluntary, and you have the right to withdraw your consent or discontinue participation at any time without penalty. So, go do the survey. Like, oh, there's obviously a ton of conversation about this. Go do the survey. It's for men. It's for women. It's for any current PDGA member that is 18 or older. Go do the survey. Now, as I was, the first question I had for the survey is, will this affect policy? And when? And I don't think I've really been answered on that, but
not till next year. Not till next year at soonest.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, at earliest, of course. But it has the results then have the opportunity to help shape and mold. And which is funny to me, shape and mold new policy or new or old or existing policy. What's crazy to me is the amount of people that immediately the first response was, well, are the results going to be published?
I hope they are, but we're not entitled to them.
That's kind of how I feel. What I'm most worried about, and maybe this is just me trying to find, I don't want to say solutions, but what I'm most worried about that here's what I'm predicting that will cause the most quote unquote conflict is, let's just play pretend and say that this survey comes back and it's 55-45 or 50-50 or 60-40 even. Pick your numbers, where there's not a definitive overarching, like, resounding response from 60, 40, any one position.
60-40 either way is pretty heavy.
I think 70-30 is. I think 75-25 is. 60-40 to me is,
it's close,
and again, maybe it depends on the participation. Yeah, but the point is, if it comes back 90%, you know, wish X and 10% wish Y, I feel like at that point, or membership base has spoken. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that, like, you know, we're wiping our hands clear of any, you know, of anything else? No, but at least the opinions have spoken loudly, however it falls. And I cannot say this enough. I want people to participate in the survey. I don't care where you stand on the topic. I know there's very impassioned people on every side of this. And I just want people to participate. And I hope it blows away the results that we saw from the previous election, the one that just took place. Because immediately when the election happened, some people said, well, that was really a referendum on this topic or that, or, you know, this kind of, tested the waters. This survey is exclusively geared toward our overarching conversation about, transgender participation within disc golf. And I believe that it's going to be broken down to some degree, even though it's going to be anonymous. It's going to be broken down of, do you play in division blank? Do you play professionally? Do you play on the tour or whatever?
There are going to be lots of ways to skew this data, regardless of I think you were just hinting at, because if they take a poll as to what division does John Van Derrison play? I play MPO. And how do you feel about transgender athletes? Well, I feel this way. Okay. Now you take Paige Pierce. You play in FPO. How do you feel about it? Will it matter if FPO, like, if you can break it down and skew it where FPO emphatically says, I'm cool with this. And then you have a large portion of the membership base that says, I'm not cool with this. or vice versa. If FPO says we're not cool with this, but they're only 6% of our, or 7 or 8% of our membership base, and a majority of people say, no, we are totally cool with this. How, there is a lot of ways we're going to be able to look at this data and skew it to the way you probably want to see it. It just depends on how it's going to be perceived by the PDGA. Does it matter if you're an FPO touring player versus an FPO local regional player? You know, there are a lot of things, because this isn't an issue that is just FPO. There are so many people, and I want to say this right now, there are so many people right now that just, I see on the internet that just say, well, I'm an MPO player, I shouldn't have a say in this. No, wrong. 100% wrong. Go take the survey, because there, I've said this before on the podcast, this is a PDGA issue. This is not just an FPO issue. This is not just a Pro Tour issue, because what we do will reflect how the PDGA looks to the public. Either direction, if we go towards the side of, we'll just say, acceptance of transgender athletes in FPO, if we go towards the sides of exclusion. And I know even putting it in those two words makes it feel like I've already decided, or I have a bias, and I do, and everyone here knows it, which is fine. But regardless of how we go, is going to look, you know, we already saw that one article that came out about Natalie Ryan last week. And there will be more depending on what the results, not the results of this survey, but the results of what the PDGA decides to do. So this isn't just an MPO or an FPO issue. This is a PDGA issue. Please, pretty please, go out and make your voice heard. That's primarily what I want. And I know Nova's on the board here saying that polls for acceptance of people always lag behind laws and policy. And she's 100% right. You know, she quotes the 90s with interracial marriage, or you can even look at gay marriage. You know, those numbers were skewed for years, and there's still people that don't accept it. So I agree with you, Nova. And I think that in this instance, particularly, I don't know, though. I just hope that everybody, like you said, everybody goes out and makes their voice heard. And I am very interested to see what the results will end up being.
I will continue to beat that drum, just like I did with, you know, with just overall voting within the PDGA board, or really any time there's a democratic process of some degree. Now, some people are already challenging and saying, though, regardless of how this poll comes back, is that how we should be dictating policy? And my response personally is, well, that kind of gives us a little bit of the temperature of the room, or the temperature of the water, whatever analogy or cliche is out there. It at least does at this point in time. If 95% of our voting body that votes in this poll or takes these results, if 95% of people feel one particular way, whatever way that is, I think we're a 501c like four, we're not a three or C9 or whatever we are, we're a sporting organization, we are a membership based club of sorts, I'm okay with us at least being dictating our policy based on those types of responses, whatever that might be. That's not to say it can't change. I mean, without getting too political, clearly all these years of precedent with Roe v. Wade or whatever have recently been overturned. And whatever policy that gets made with regard to our transgender athletes,
nothing's permanent.
Nothing's permanent. In 20 years, whatever's decided could be absolutely flipped on its head. But if right now the temperature of the room states blank, then, and it's a resounding, especially if it's resounding, well, then maybe we go that way. I don't know, but I just can't say it enough. I do want to repeat, though, this is not a PDGA. This is so crucial. This is not a PDGA assembled survey and research. This is done by, I have it written down somewhere. This is done by smarter people at
third party
doing actual research. A third party. The PDGA will take the results and take the submissions and whatnot and use it to then influence and or be part of it. But this is not a PDGA funded, exclusively funded and or assembled research project. And I think that is crucial because, you know, everyone could say there's going to be a particular bias or slant to it. There's a ton of factors that go into having a research project done of this nature, and it has to check like 50 boxes, and this is going to do just that.
And we might,
those to me are crucial.
We don't know if it's just PDGA. They might be asking Ultimate players. They might be asking, like, this particular survey and result, it might be bigger than the, just the PDGA. There could be, you know, spike ball or whatever. There could be looking at a lot of niche sports. I don't know. I don't know if it's just a if the PDGA just did this survey on their own for the research. It felt like the research paper, so to speak, was something bigger than just PDGA. But I think it's specific
to disc golf. No, is it specific?
Okay.
It is. And I think that's part of the argument that's happening right now.
Then I take that back.
And I very much disagree with Dixon Jowers, who happens to be right in his post, happens to be right in front of me, which kind of frustrated me. He posted earlier today and said, so the IOC made their changes in November of 2021. The PDGA began working on this in January of 2022. Now, in October, they are sending out a survey. The wheels of progress are blindingly fast. I think he's being sarcastic there, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. And to that point, I'll say this to anyone. How many effing surveys, how many effing studies do you think we have in that are disc golf specific to our transgender athletes? I'm going to guess there's effing zero of them. So I get it that everybody, this is a hot item and everybody's really worked up about it. And I understand that. But at the same time, do you think just like multi-million dollar studies just appear out of nowhere? Like, it really frustrates me that someone as smart as Dixon Jowers would have such a cocky statement about it when he should understand, because I know he's a smart guy, he should understand that no matter where you fall on this issue, something like this doesn't just happen overnight.
And even if we have
a study in disc golf, exactly. And
I understand,
as others would say,
it's a very public issue right now. I get that. And I don't want it to be rushed. And honestly, I think the survey is coming at a perfect time. I wouldn't want this survey to come out in June, because then you have 4 months of people screaming at the PDGA, or 5 months or 6 months, like, where are the results of our survey? And if the results come back, then you have got people, let's just say they come back in August, then you've got people screaming about how changing the policy. Like, no, it's the middle of the season. I would rather this time do it in the off season. Let's take care of it. We can address it in the off season. We don't have to make any weird mid-season changes, yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. My question is, and I'm glad they're doing the survey, but how different of a survey, I want everyone to think about this, and yes, this might be me trying to skew the results. What if we change our policy and Barbasol says, cool, see ya. We're not interested in that type of advertising. We're not interested. Like, are we, which is why I say partially this is a PDGA issue and not just an FPO, MPO issue. We need to look at how we're perceived. We need to kind of go where the winds blow if we're looking at getting bigger sponsorship. Does Johnsonville Brat, does Guarantee Rate Mortgage, you know, if we are looked at as an, we'll just say, exclusionary sport, does that change how major sponsors look at us? And should we care about that? I mean, because I'll tell you what, if you tell the players your pro tour finale is going to be a $302,000 purse, or it can be a $200,000 purse, I'll tell you how many of them are going to vote.
Yeah.
Right away. And granted, that's a made up scenario that I have no idea what the right answer is. I'm just saying, like, we do need to look at how the PDGA looks publicly, because that and the DGPT, because they are hand in hand right now. They're walking down the aisle with the, you know, together, we'll say. They're walking down the aisle together because if the PDGA makes a decision, there's a very good chance the DGPT is going to follow those particular rule sets. I don't foresee there being a scenario where the PDGA, as much as I would love it, if the PDGA changes, I don't think the DGPT is going to go against that. But I don't know.
Yeah, not likely.
Not likely.
Exactly.
So anyway, we can move on from the subject.
At any rate,
we have beat it to death for a while.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not worth arguing with people. It's so funny that people want to scream about it who think I'm necessarily arguing for or against them. That's totally fine if you want to continue to bark in the chat. My takeaway here is vote and respond to this survey. I know plenty of people have very loud voices about a lot of things, myself included. So just go fill out the survey. Let's see what the survey comes back and then go from there. And I know there's even some objection to that, which is understandable. Some people have said to me, hey, even if the survey came back, you know, 99% in favor of keeping the policy the way it is, some would still say, well, I don't care. I still feel this way about it. And that's not how we should necessarily create policy based on public opinion. I understand that argument as well. I am just most interested in what the survey does come back as, because if the board member vote, some were saying, was very much about, you know, this one issue. If you just looked at that one issue and the board member, the PDGA board of directors votes, you would think that it wasn't as much of an issue as some people say it is. Now, this survey may say the exact opposite. I don't know. I just want you to fill out the survey to your heart's content, whatever that is. I don't care what your opinion is. I just want you to fill out the survey. And so then they can analyze. And again, let's make this very clear. These are professionals that are doing research, which is more than like 99.9% of us have ever done.
No, Terry, I read a Facebook article. I know it all.
Okay, well, except for you. Then you're an effing genius. But everyone else... but anyway, my point is... Please just fill out the survey. That's what I'm asking of you. You can get all mad at me if you want for no good reason, but I'm just telling you, fill out the survey. I'll fill it out. Everybody should fill it out. And we'll see what happens. We'll see what is said there. There's still no promises. What I worry about the most is the survey comes back and it's 50-50, because then what do?
Then we rely on...
You literally have 50% of the membership being really pissed off and 50% of the membership being content. That's my only worry.
We rely on our elected officials to do what... we just have to... At that point, we have to rely on our elected officials. Like it or not, regardless of how they're going to vote. That's just how it works. And we're going to have to rely on them no matter what, whether it's 50-50... Or 70-30, we have to rely on them. So,
correct.
Yeah, but
I don't believe I'm about to say this, but I will.
I do, because you say stupid things sometimes.
That's fine. This isn't stupid, and this is it's borderline embarrassing. I'm going to say it. Ella Hansen is not a transgender athlete. So if you fucking post that.
Do you know why people think that?
Because she has short hair and she throws far.
No, not just that. Terry, I swear, and I know this sounds very strange. If you do a Google search for Ella Hansen trans, and I did this, and I shoved it, I swear to God, Terry, there is an Ella Hansen on LinkedIn who supports... trans, for whatever reason, because I've seen this screenshot, Google took every Ella Hansen from LinkedIn and gave them the same description in their link, and I'm looking at it right now, and I don't know, it looks like I'll have to grab my screenshot, because I screenshotted. There were four LinkedIns for Ella Hansen that all had the exact same description. They took one Ella Hansen and gave a description. So you see people copying and pasting this Google search like, no, look, it was on her LinkedIn. I'm like, no, it wasn't.
Cool. Check your fucking research department because you're wrong.
So that is one of the reasons why that rumor is being spread. I took a screenshot. I posted on Dixon's page and at one point showing, hey, look, here are all the people. Here are all of the ones that all say Ella Hansen with the same description. It's a Google indexing issue. Please stop spreading this.
Cool. So what is this proof? Google's not always right. Maybe you should shut the F up. Like
I'm with you.
We could
I'm just
go
saying
on and
that,
on.
That is like, one of the like weird things that somebody found somewhere and decided to share. Because the link did go to Ella's actual LinkedIn page. But then if you look at all the details in her LinkedIn page, it was all different versus what the Google description, the short description was. So I'm just saying, if you see that out there, people, because I've seen people post it like it's proof for some reason. It's not.
What?
Ignore it.
You're telling me the internet's not always right? It's not always telling the truth or it misguided you?
And frankly, it's none of our fucking business.
Exactly. That's why I say I'm embarrassed to even say it.
I know.
Because it's not my business. It's not her business.
That is one of the reasons why people are so adamantly saying that. So just know that if you do see that, it's bullshit. That's it.
It's so pathetic that it has to be stated or seemingly has to be stated or that people just immediately feel like that's where they should go with the conversation because Ella threw 552 feet yesterday and you're immediately going to somehow degrade her in any capacity or lob out incorrect insults. And I'm just sick of it. And this goes back to point number one, which is,
here,
let's just like be nicer to these people to literally everyone. Like, let's just be nicer, period. Like,
I'm showing it on the broadcast because I dug up the screenshot that I had. Last time I checked, she wasn't an IT DevOps. She wasn't a journalist and she's not impact investing analyst intern. So there is the exact description from everybody, but people are clipping only the top one and claiming it as some sort of truth. So there, that's out there. We're done. We don't need to talk about it anymore.
All right, moving on. So let's talk trash about, no, I'm just kidding.
Now who can we talk trash about?
No, I really don't have anything else other than the woman I would like to talk a little bit of trash about.
Who is it?
I don't know her. And she was having a bad day, maybe, or maybe it's just her MO. This is maybe after show fodder, but I ran into the Walmart right next to the course yesterday.
This is after show fodder. I can feel it already.
But I did come back out and the lady, you know, all the memes and the jokes about like people who do or don't return carts, or put carts back in their stanchions or whatever. This lady put some stuff in her car, then put her cart up on like the island so it wouldn't maybe go into other cars, and then gets into her car and then takes off her Walmart smock. And I'm like, wait a minute. You work here. You work here, you jerk. You literally just left a cart in the parking lot for one of your coworkers. God bless her. She maybe had a bad day and had somewhere to be. Her actions said otherwise. Or her urgency, and I do not hate her, but I definitely had my head in my hands thinking, what did I just see?
I just take my cart and push it towards another car and drive away. I hope there's somebody in there to stop it. I don't know.
Anyway.
Isn't it a game where you see how far away you can get from like the cart return and you just shove it and hope it goes straight? You don't play that game?
I don't know. Yeah, Alan, let's suspend her from the PDGA. I just, you know, and you see people not return carts and you're, you know, whatever, you're whatever. But she literally was wearing her Walmart smock still. And I just thought, like, you work here. Oh, and maybe what drove me crazy is she was parked closest to the store. There was no parking spot closer to the store than hers, which tells me she was probably first in there, maybe at 6 a.m. God bless her for being an early riser.
I totally understand.
She takes the closest spot to the door.
You either have to walk all the way back to the store, or you have to walk further into the parking lot to put your cart away.
She's closest to the store.
But you still have to turn around and walk 50 feet.
God bless her. God bless her. I takes all kinds.
It does.
Again, let's talk policy over person. I wish there was a policy that said she had to pay a dollar more next time she went into Walmart. I don't know. All right, guys, let's close it out. We're going to take commercial break by our friends at Founders. And we're going to thank Danamite, Dana Vici. This one went a little off the rails quick tonight. But thanks to Danamite for joining us. Talking a little bit about USDGC, the throw pink. Also, please go out, vote. And I hate saying vote. Fill out the survey. Go out and fill out the survey.
That survey is supposed to be in your email in the next day or two.
It's supposed to drop tomorrow.
Yep.
Yes. I heard as early as tomorrow. So get out there and let your voice be heard.
Check your spam filters too, people.
Check your spam filters, all that good stuff. The survey... is being conducted by a team of university researchers working with the PDGA medical committee. They're not asking for your name or PDGA number, as we discussed, and your individual responses will be kept strictly confidential. So
can I put my stuff in there anyway?
A summary of the results may be helpful in informing policy. Those are some talking points for you. All right, guys, USDGC Throw Pink Week, closing out the tour, looking into 2023, big week next week for Barbasol, big week this week for USDGC and the folks at Innova and the PDGA, another major, and our friends at Throw Pink, looking forward to absolutely all of it. We'll close out the regular show. We'll come back in the after show and have some more silliness for you. For Danamite, for Johnny V, I'm the Disc Golf Guy. We'll see you in the after show. When you step inside the Smashbox.
Thank you to our $2 and above patrons. Your name is listed below in the credits. If you are interested in being listed as a producer in the Smashbox TV credits and supporting this and other fine podcasts, please visit patreon.com/SmashboxTV.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.